This week on Risk, you'll hear LeCount Holmes Jr.
It was intense. It was over the top.
You'll also hear Taj Easton.
Who's this thing on? Am I speaking to this part, or how do you know if it's working?
Because Taj is hosting this week's episode. Hey everybody, this is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. This is Rafter in the background now, and I'm Taj Easton, sitting in for Kevin Allison this week because I formed a very meaningful relationship with this week's storyteller, LeCount Holmes Jr. The story you're about to hear is cut from a series of very candid conversations between LeCount and I about dads, and I have a thought or two about dads, let me tell you what. You're not going to hear me much in here because this is LeCount's story, but damn it, know that I was sitting there pretty transfixed because I wish my dad loved me better. If you have a dad, you probably have daddy issues, because that's been the case for everyone I've ever met. LeCount Holmes Jr. I've only known the guy a couple of months, but to be perfectly honest, I called him Pops by the end of our first conversation. So I said to Kevin, "Look, that's my dad's story, kind of, so I would like to present it, please." So I present to y'all this week's episode, Pop Obi's Vibrator, and I'm extremely excited, and you are about to hear why. I would just like to make everyone aware it is sexually explicit, and it contains scenes and circumstances which some folks might find uncomfortable or outright triggering. Be aware. We're going to go to commercial for a moment, and then we'll be right back.
Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
What happens when two people who grew up in a very strange corner of Los Angeles look back and realize just how bizarre their upbringings really were?
They start a podcast, of course.
I'm Ashley Johnson.
And I'm Taliesin Jaffe. Before we became the internet people we are today, we spent our childhoods as working actors, appearing in shows like Growing Pains and films like Mr. Mom.
In our podcast, Weird Kids, we're diving deep into our unique upbringings, our friendship with each other, and all the delightfully odd interests we still carry with us today.
In each episode, we get to share stories of our youth, the things that bring us joy, the problems that we face, and occasionally, the friends we've collected along the way.
If you're a misfit, an outcast, or just a weirdo who loves all things nostalgic and unconventional, come take a seat at our table.
Each week, we'll be releasing previously members-only episodes on YouTube and all major podcast platforms, with new episodes dropping exclusively and ad-free on Beacon.tv.
With all that dilly-dallying out of the way, I present to y'all LeCount Holmes Jr. with a story that we call Don't Hurt My Son.
My father and I always had this bond, if you will. It was a relationship that there are times when I think about it, it's hard to explain. I feel and I felt that my father was God in a physical form. I felt that my father could do no wrong. And mind you, my father certainly wasn't perfect, as none of us are perfect. He was a loving human being. He was one who wasn't afraid to open arms and say, "I love you." My dad was never afraid to say, "I love you." Before we ended the conversation, my dad said, "Son, I love you." I can't tell you. I hear his voice today. I hear his voice. When I was 11 or 12 years old, my father said to me, just basically out of the clear blue sky, he said, I want you, when you get older, I want you to learn how to make love. And making love isn't just by you putting your dick or your penis in a woman. It's more than that. He said, when I think that you're matured enough and old enough, I will introduce you to a grown woman. Some years had passed by. I was 16 years old, fairly new to high school. And my father said he wanted to introduce an adult female to me. He told me that he would pick me up from school and we would go to this hotel. I was excited, but I was I was scared. So because I was so excited and knowing that my dad would pick me up from school, I had one buddy who I grew up with, and his name was Ronnie. And I said, Ronnie, you won't believe this, but Dad is going to pick me up from school, and there's this lady he's going to turn me on to, and she's 30. And Ronnie looked at me and was shocked, and he said, no, that's not happening. I said, come outside with me at the end of school, and you will see this woman. So we walked out. We walked outside, and he knew my father's car. And he could clearly see there was a passenger in my dad's car. My dad had a Plymouth at that time. And Ronnie, he said, LeCount, look, there's your dad. There's your dad's car. And then he looked again, he leaned. He said, and there's a woman in there too. He said, oh, no, there's your dad. And he said, damn, that's... He was blown. He was blown. I said, I told you. And of course, being teenagers, he said, when it's all over, please tell me what happened. So I'm sitting in the back right behind my dad. Hello, son, he said. I said, hey, Pop, how you doing? He said, I'm fine. He said, how are you doing? I started laughing. He said, I want to introduce you to Elaine. She wasn't that tall, possibly about 5'6", 5'7", brown skin. She turned around and she looked at me. Her eyes were inviting. I could see that she had a body that God would have said, did I make that? Did I make that? I'm pretty sure that I was trying to be as cool and as smooth as I possibly could be, but I'm sure there was a little bit of stuttering. I'm sure there was a moment of heartbeats. I'm sure there was a moment that I felt like I had to pee because I knew what was coming up. That moment in time with Dad and Elaine, scared as hell, they made it very comfortable for me, almost as though I had been there before. Finally, we arrived at the hotel, the Dunbar Hotel. Got out of the car, walked into the building. This room, Dad opened up the door and it was set up really nice. It had a bed, it was clean, had a sink in the corner, didn't have a bathroom, but the sink was there to wash your hands and towels. And at that time, my heart was beating like a upright bass, boom, 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 moving fast. And so Elaine and I sat down. My dad is standing up and just making sure everything was in order and in place. And as Elaine and I, we kind of stretched out on the bed a little bit, then my father walked slowly towards the door, and with his big eyes, and he looked at Elaine, and he kind of laughed a little bit, and he said, "Don't hurt my son." And we smiled, or Elaine did. I think I was too scared to smile. Oh, boy. My, my, my. How well do I remember. Pop walked out, and as we were lying there, she talked to me. She had the most sexiest voice I had ever heard. It was absolutely delicious. It's the sound of her voice just captivated me immensely. It was a symphony, and it was perfect. She had asked me a few things about myself and asked me if I had had a girlfriend. I didn't have a lot to say because I was nervous. My brain was twirling around quite fast, and I just couldn't believe it, that this was happening to me. And so she took my shirt off, and she took my undershirt off, and she groaned and moaned a little bit, and my clothes were off. Then it was her turn, and she just took off her top, and it was so slow. It was like in slow motion, and before I knew it, she was naked in the bed. She touched my hand. She hugged me. I hugged her. And finally she said, "LeCount." And I said, "Yes." "Do you know anything about around the world?" And I said, "No, I don't know what that means." And so she explained. She said, "I would lick you from your toes, suck your toes, kiss the bottom of your feet, your ankles, and then your calves, all the way up to the top of your head, put my tongue in every place where there was an opening." And so she started. I had a girlfriend at that time who was my age, but she and I knew nothing at all about this. This was hard for me to believe, that my dad, my father, my blood, the person who helped me to come into this world, that he thought enough of me to give me this gift. And I must admit that I thought that I was in love with her, but she made it clear, this is not about love. This is about you learning how to make love, not just sex, not just fucking. Once my dad arrived to come over and pick us up, he knocked on the door, opened the door, and he was smiling. And he said, "You didn't hurt my son, did you?" Elaine said, "No, your son hurt me." And so I know she told Pop that she would like to see me again, and I wanted to see her again. We talked, the three of us, for a while. very joyous occasion. It was a proud moment for my dad, because he used to say, "That's my son. That's my son." And then it was time to go, and he took Elaine home, dropped her off, said, "See you later." Not goodbye, but just see you later, because we both knew that we would see her again. As we were riding along, it was a lot of laughter. He pat me on my head and gave me a kiss on my cheek, as he always did, as if to say, "I'm proud of you, son. I'm proud of you." Elaine and I became lovers. I would save up my money and catch the bus to her house downtown. It was well worth it. It was well worth it. One evening, I went there, and she took me to her refrigerator. So I'm wondering, why would you take me to her refrigerator? She opened up the freezer slowly. And when she opened it up, over to the left side of the freezer, it was this big half smoke. Now, for those of you who don't know, it's a large hot dog. It's wide and long, half smoked hot dog. And she looked at me. She said, "This is mine. I use it when a man or men don't satisfy me. And I keep it wrapped up so that no one in the house, they know not to touch my half smoke." Oh my God. Now, I know we use the word freaky in many cultures, but that was freaky. But what I found out, I realized that it turned me on. It turned me on. And there were times that she would pull out that half smoke when we were making love. And while she was kissing me, she would use the half smoke to fuck herself. And it was turning me on. And then she would kiss me. Then she would put the half smoke in her mouth. Lord have mercy. And then she would take my dick and then put it in her mouth. Something like that, somebody should be arrested. It was over the top. It was intense. It was beautiful. It was nurturing. I knew that Elaine was more than special. I knew it. Elaine was, at some point in time, a lover to my father and a lover to my grandfather. My father got in touch with me, and I went over to his home. This particular day, when I went over to Dad's home, my dad crossed his leg and he looked at me, and he had this thing in his hand, and it was wrapped up, and he looked at me and said, "This is a vibrator." He said it was my father's, your grandfather's. And he said, "I had it, and now I'm passing it on to you." Well, I was a little bit thrown back, because I didn't know at that time. I had no idea what a vibrator was, not at all. he and I had never talked about toys. So my father felt that it was important, as he's tutoring me, teaching me how to be a man in the bed and just be a man, that it was important for me to have this vibrator. It was beige. It was a plug-in, electric, had several tips to it. And he told me how to use it on a woman. Here we go. It was another class of how to please a woman. I knew some things about my grandfather, who only lived to be 55 years old. So he was fairly young when he passed away. I knew some things about him, his sexual escapades, but not a lot, not as much as my father did. So this vibrator, the owner originally was my grandfather, and I called him Pop Obi. And so that was one of my first tools, other than the tools on my body that I had. And it was all because of my dad passing it down from my grandfather to my father and then to me.
We're going to go to commercial for a moment, and then we'll be back with Account Holmes Jr.
They say go big or go home. But now you can go big at home with the Big Arch on delivery. When you're hungry for something big, like really big, Big Arch for big McDonald's hunger. Order on the McDonald's app. Save from 11 a.m. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery orders. Subject to availability. Price and participation may vary.
Well, the very first threesome with Pop, I was 19. May was 50 at that time. Dad was so random, and I mean, spur of the moment type of thing. He's a creative soul, so I don't know what really gave him the idea or the thought that we would do something like this. So he called May, and she said she was home, and he said, well, I'm going to bring my son over there with me. And she said, okay. So we drove over there. She opens up the door and she has on a gown. May was very beautiful and she looked a little bit like Billie Holiday. I'm looking at her and she's checking me out, and my dad proudly says, this is my son, LeCount Jr. And she says, hello. And then something hit me. And I thought about it. I said, this couldn't be. But it was. May, I saw her briefly when I was with my grandfather. I was 13 or 14. And my grandfather, he took me out. It was a very, very hot day. I'll never forget it. And he pulled up to this apartment. She lived up on the third floor. And he hit his horn, honk, honk. And she put her head out the window and she said, come on up. And my grandfather left me in the car. He was there for a good little while.
Oh, boy.
He came back with a smile on his face, and then we drove off. Fast forward a few years later, that was the lady that he was seeing. I was blown away with that. So May welcomes us into her abode. Three of us sit there and talk. We're on the sofa. And the next thing I knew, May invited us to the bedroom. I was a little nervous because, you know, now I'm about to see my father perform. Nervous in a way of not being resistant, but just nervous. Just nervous, you know. Then we're in the bed naked with this beautiful lady. Soft hair, light-skinned lady, and just beautiful, beautiful personality. And I got on top of her. I felt that I was like king of the jungle, you know. I was fucking her fast. And I'll never, ever forget, my dad is on the side watching us. And she said to me, "Baby, take your time. It's not that serious. Take your time." Well, that intimidated me, and my dick went down. I'm never, oh my God, my dick went down. She was telling me the truth. I didn't have to bang it out like a choo-choo train. I didn't have to do that. She said, "Just take your time." So what she did, she performed oral sex on me. And my dad is watching her, watching us. And then in a very short period of time, I was ready like Freddy. And I got inside of her and did exactly what she instructed me to do. It was just really great. Yeah. And so my father performed oral sex on her. And now here I am watching my dad. And she loved it. He was a master. And I learned much from watching him. Awful lot. And I never forget, I used to tease him because my father was a vocalist. And jazz vocalist, but when he was performing oral sex, he sounded like he was singing. He was humming. Over the years, I've learned if you don't have a passion for what you're doing, it's fruitless. It's mechanical. And my dad wasn't mechanical. And of course, I learned from him, and I wasn't mechanical. I could see the art. We were loving. We touched her at the same time at different parts of her body to make sure that she was happy and make sure that she was complete. And the interesting thing is that we never did it again when May. But I might add, it was one of the best threesomes that me and my dad did in the years that we were out there together. It was one of the very best. And he was really proud of his son. As a matter of fact, he pat me on the back, kissed me on my forehead, and told me how much he loved me. The mere fact of my dad being open enough to open the door for me to have these experiences, he was a different type of man. When I look back at some of my male friends and the relationship that they had with their father, it couldn't have touched the one that I had with Dad. My father opened up the door for me to be really secure as a man in a world that wasn't always open to me in many different ways. I never looked at those things that he did for me with women were wrong. I do believe that all of those things he did brought me so much closer to him. It was the year of 1990, and I relocated to Atlanta. The word was that Atlanta was growing, but I took it upon myself, very little money, didn't know anyone, not having any family. It was a struggle. My father would talk to me all the time. There was something about the strength, the courage that my father, his voice, really gave me a lot of hope to press forward. I go back to remembering when, at the age of 4 years old, attempting to ride my tricycle, and I fell on the cement, and my father said, "Get up and do it again. You got this." And while I was living in Atlanta, there were so many times that I fell pursuing different things. I constantly heard his voice. Eventually, I became a speaker. Eventually, I became a historical reenactor. But I always heard my dad's voice when I was at my smallest moments in life. Dad's voice. "Get up and do it again." I was trying to find my place, and it was indeed a struggle. My dad called me, and he said, "Son," he said, "look, I've got a suit that I cannot fit. It won't fit me." So I'm wondering, why is Dad telling me that? Because I'm 6'2 and a half, he's 5'8". So he said, "I wonder if you could fit it." I thought that was strange. I didn't question him, but in my head, I said, "Dad and I, the last time I could fit Dad's suit, when I was 13, I was 6 feet. And so I thought it was kind of odd. So Dad said, "I'm going to put it in the mail. I'll send it to you." So I said, "Okay." So I got the notice and looked at it. It was wrapped up really nice. I opened it. It was a beautiful gray suit, and it wasn't used. It was brand new. And he knew I was struggling, and he bought me a suit. He bought it off the rack, and I said, "Dad," and I started crying. And I said, "Dad, you didn't have to do it." He said, "Don't tell me that, son." He said, "I knew you were struggling. And when you're out there looking for a job, you always want to look nice." Buddy Ronnie, who was there with me when I was going to see Elaine, every once in a while he shares this with me. He and his father, they were tight, but they weren't huggy and kissy. They weren't like that. One day, he and his father, they have a family home in the country, in a rural area, and it was just he and his father. They exchanged words, and he looked at his dad and then said, "Dad, I love you." And he hugged his father. He said his father broke down and cried because his father never had that. The reason why Ronnie did that is because he learned that from me and my dad. Yeah. And he said he was so happy that he did it because a year or two later, his father was dead. My dad, the last day I saw him was November the 22nd, 2014. He was dying. He was in a home and he was dying. And he wasn't that handsome man. His liver had eaten him up. He looked like a scarecrow. Towards the end of his life, he started drinking. And personality changed. He wasn't as affectionate. A lot of things in Dad changed, and I think he felt more insecure. He became somewhat insecure with himself because he was growing older, and we knew that his time was short. We put him in a home. I would go to the home, and it's a good little drive from where I live, and he wanted a candy bar. And what was it? I can see it now. Name a couple of candy bars.
All right, we got Snickers.
Snickers. Boom. Ooh, that's it.
First guess.
Yeah. He loved them. Yeah, and I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was Snickers. And the night before he passed, that was really hard because he was in a fetus position trying to move about. And here, all of these thoughts went through my head that here's a man that's been in my life all of these years. I was by myself, and I was the last family member to see him alive because I stayed there at the home with him until late in the evening and then left. I kissed him on his head. I certainly did, as always, because he opened that door for affection. Early that morning, I got word that he had passed.
Do you think the last thing you said to him was, "I love you, Dad"?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, my God. Yeah. I didn't think that he was going to see the next day through. But yeah, I certainly did. As always, that's just like to ask me, is my name LeCount Holmes? Yeah.
This is Risk. This is Shushu in the background now, and you just heard LeCount Holmes Jr. Go to LeCountHolmesJr.com to find LeCount's amazing book, Taboos Unspoken. Picking up Taboos Unspoken and exploring his words on the page is the best way to continue your journey with our man. The man who's like a dad to me, but who actually says I love you. LeCount Holmes Jr. LeCountHolmesJr.com. There is so much of my conversations with LeCount that did not make it into this episode. And if you want to get that, what you got to do is make your way over to Patreon, where I have compiled the annals, the archives of sprawling, wickedly intimate conversations of Taj and LeCount. He talks to me about his lineage.
My great-grandmother, who lived in my house, she was born a slave, born in 1859. I had to say, yes, ma'am.
The generations of homes that came before him that seemed to be a succession of loving, emotionally available men.
My grandfather would just pop up and come over to our house and see me. My grandfather would always tell me how much he loved me. My grandfather was the shoulders that my father stood on.
LeCount seemed to be part of a culture that I knew very little about.
Being African American in those times and very segregated, you know, there was a certain mindset.
We're going to get into some of the more nuanced, darker aspects of LeCount's relationship with his father.
My father spun the tires, drove over to this dark street, and back then it didn't have bucket seats or separate seats. Everything was together. He dragged me, got out of the car, and got in a boxing position and started to fight me.
What? You can hear about the grandfather, Pop Obie, the original owner of the legendary Pop Obie's vibrator. Scuffles on the streets and encounters with the cops in D.C. in the 70s.
It was two white cops. They had their hands on the pistol.
And hear about LeCount's relationship with his mother.
Would she hit you?
Oh, yeah, my mother did. She, with the belt. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
oh.
Yeah, with a belt.
You're going to hear me whinging about never feeling loved by my dad?
I was crying real hard, and he laughed at me, and that stuck with me really bad.
I think there's a lot there that you're very likely to find fascinating and worth your while. You can find that over at patreon.com/risk. Become a patron of The Risk Show, and not only will you get this content, you'll be propping up this organization and the fine work we do talking about men at varying levels of emotional ineptitude and communication handicap. Some of them with a surprising amount of skill in these areas. Anyone out there with experience in managing talent, LeCount is a professional speaker and he is looking for new management for his speaking circuit, beginning immediately. If you're an individual that believes you possess the talent and the skills, go to his website, LeCountHolmesJr.com, and get in touch with the man. I want to take a second to acknowledge that for some folks, this episode may not have been all fun and games. Different people are different, and I just want to honor and respect any kind of reaction to this that is not comfortable. We hope that nothing we've played was disturbing for folks. We try to be a place where folks can tell stories that can't be told elsewhere. And we are here to hear anybody's responses if you'd like them to be heard. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening with an open heart. I am stupidly in love with the Risk production team, the people working behind the scenes here. John LaSala, Jeff Barr, Hope Brush, Cindy Freeman, JC Cassis. There's Kevin Alison. I haven't seen that guy around. He must be in accounting. David Crabb. The list goes on, people. This is a big team that makes this happen. They're all magical. Thank you to them. Thank you to y'all, without whom we would not exist. I find it weird to say I love you to a whole hundreds of thousands of people I don't know, but I love you. And also, LeCount, I know you're listening, Pops. I love you. And folks, today's the day. Take a risk. I don't like that I let it go for so long. I love you very dearly, and I hope that we are friends forever. And our not talking was not for a lack of me valuing.
Thank you, John. Let me stop it right there, young man.
Yeah.
Look, people enter our lives for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And that's a tough lesson to learn. I remember when I was in elementary school, I would come home and say, Mom, Dad, that's my friend right there. Now, I just met that person 15 minutes ago.
Yeah.
You know, but in our heads, that seed, this is the way I believe, is planted. Oh, that's my friend.
Yeah.
Well, it takes a while to be really a friend. And what is really, who has a measuring stick to say what a friend is?
That's right.
But I do know this, that people enter our lives for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. That's the way I see it.
Do you know which one of the three I'm hoping for?
What's that?
I'm hoping for lifetime.
You got it. You got it.
Yeah.